It's time again for the Scotty Johnny Podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam. Talking Wisconsin sports, two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what he read on Twitter. With music by Duluth Greats, Cars and Trucks, here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny Podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett himself, Scotty Johnny. And I'm coming at you with the John Solo version of the podcast this week because Aaron, like quite a lot of Wisconsinites, is up at the camp this week. He's up with family, and he's in some place where he is not able to get to internet. He's not able to get to any sort of services. So it's going to be a little bit of a just me. It's just going to be me and... It's going to hopefully go a little faster here. I'm a little out of voice this week as well, as you may have heard, so I'll try to keep all the coughing out of here, but I've had a little bit of a drainage problem going on here, so, you know, and of course all of you wanted to know that, but anyhow, the first big things I'll tell you is that you can follow this podcast on Twitter, at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me, at Not So Humble Host, and you can follow Aaron, my usual co-host, at Cheesehead, pardon me, at Cheddar Talk. You can follow him at Cheddar Talk. And I always tell him he's my, as per usual, co-host, because he is not always able to be with me. And so this week is just going to be one of those type of weeks. But we'll get things started right away because I have things to talk about here and quite a few things to get through. And we'll start all of that off in our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
Okay, so got a little bit of a drink there in the break while I was getting that all put together. So the first thing you have to start off with is, of course, the Packers. Packers had the Sunday night game. It got flexed because, of course, this is a big game that everybody wanted to see. And it let, you know, most of us in the country down. People who were not fans of either team were definitely disappointed in this game because they didn't get to see a matchup of two evenly matched teams. The 49ers were just way better this week. There was no doubt about that. There's any number of things that you could have said were different factors in this. There were any number of bad calls you could have pointed to as existing. None of that changed this game. There's a 29-point difference between these two teams. None of that was referees. None of that was TVs or anything else like that. Everything about this game, everything that happened in here, was just that the 49ers were the better team this week. Now, one of the things, first off, it started off on a terrible note. It started off terribly, probably about the worst way it could have started off for a game. Looked like it was about to be a 3-and-out, deep in our own territory, when it turned out Rodgers fumbles. The 49ers get the ball inside the 10 and get a very short drive to get the game scoring started. Packers on the next drive look like they have a little something going. Get the ball at the 25, run a nice little pass. They're getting out. They got about 15 yards, but then there's a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct against Davante Adams, which was just about the most questionable. The only way that that isn't a crazy call is if he said something. That's one of those words that just draws the flag immediately. You know, he drops one of those words, maybe. But it just didn't seem like any of that was what was going on. It seemed like he bumped them, and the refs wanted to get in front of it early. But later on in the game, I think it was Deebo Samuel caught a ball, and he's right in front of J.R. Alexander, and he bumped him out of the way to do a little dance or anything. It was just as bad as anything Devontae had done, and I'm much more okay with it if it's consistent. As long as it's consistent, at least you know what to expect, and you can adjust your play, you can adjust yourself accordingly to make that sort of work. But the problem here was those two plays can't both exist in the same game and one called and one not. And again, the only thing that makes it different is if Davante Adams said something. He drops one of those words, which of course I'm just not going to say. He drops one of those words, then that's the problem. Then it's on Devontae. But it did not appear that he did any of that because nobody came out after the game and said that's what happened. They said it was an unsportsmanlike because he bumped into a guy as he was leaving the sideline going back out onto the field. It didn't look like he said anything. It didn't look like he turned and did much of anything. But that killed that drive. Now, say what you want about that, the drive killing play getting in the way and killing momentum on what could have been at least a chance to get something going, something rolling. But then, of course, turned that drive into, I guess it was a first down, followed by an unsportsmanlike conduct, which gave them a 15-yard penalty, which basically put them starting back at the 25 as if nothing had happened but time had passed. Now, there's something to be said about it killing the momentum of that drive, but there were no other drives after that that looked like they were getting going. There was one drive where they did get down, they got into field goal range, and in a 10-point game, they decided to go for it. And the number, this is one of my big things, the number of people, and it's a pet peeve for me, and you can disagree with me, and obviously you will if you want to. Absolutely nobody's going to stop you, obviously. And I won't know if you do it either, because I'm not, you know, listening unless you want to get back at me on Twitter. The thing is, I can't stand chasing points in early in the first quarter like that, or early in the second quarter. Going for it on fourth down in field goal range there is trying to be gutsy for the sake of being gutsy. Like you think you're making a big play and making a big statement. All you're doing is setting up your team to a possible failure. And somewhere they're like, oh, we've got the analytics. We've got the analytics. But you have what could be a one-score game. And instead you gave the 49ers every bit of momentum to say, we've still got the shutout. We've still got the shutout. And there's just no reason for that. It seems like it's too cute by half. There are times where using the analytics don't actually account for everything that's going on in that exact minute, because the analytics are based on a long-range planning goal to give you percentages of different things to say, like, look, you're more likely to get this, and it's more likely in the long run to play out better for you. That's in the long run. You're trying to win one game. The long run is based on the idea that you're going to have several of these fourth and shorts from this position, and they're going to work out a certain number of times. You're not going to get that many of those. For that to be effective, that has to be a situation that occurs often enough that the analytic matters. To say that, well, you got a 67% chance of making this and getting a touchdown, it's, you know, and you're whatever, you know, 57% chance that this is better off, and you're going to get more points in the long run than that. But the thing is that minute, you had a chance to make it a one-score game, and you blew that because the analytic matters if you're going to have that fourth and short in field goal range again later in the game. And the bulk of them over the course of time allows you to have a better chance of winning the game. We had one of them. There was one of them. The analytic didn't matter because there was only one of those plays. It didn't happen several times. The analytic works if it's a frequently occurring event. It's too cute by half and it needs to stop. That sort of stuff is nonsense. We've done it twice this year. And people go on Twitter immediately I think it's twice the last 2 weeks, where people immediately like, look, I really love the call. Because it happened, the Carolina game and everything too. And they're like, I love the call to go for it. I just didn't like the play call. I don't care what the play call is. I didn't like it. It has, in both cases, cost us points this year. That's two consecutive games where we went for it and everybody loved it because it's gutsy, but it cost us points both times. And in the long run, we'll get those points back, and it didn't kill us in Carolina, but that only made us more confident that we should keep doing that. Maybe if you get it that one time, you know, you end up, it doesn't hurt you, you should stop there. That should maybe be the thing that tells you that you've gone too far and the analytic already kind of worked out in your favor once. Maybe the next time is the time where it fails you. But beyond that one kind of little pet peeve thing of mine, nothing went well for the team in this game. I'll look for just like the general team stats. Rushed passing first downs, you know, total first downs, teams were pretty even, 19 to 16. Now some of that was garbage time for the Packers. The Packers were 1 of 15 on third down. 1 of 15 on third down. 49ers were 3 of 9, but they were 0 of 9 at one point. It was the last drive that they just broke the Packers back with that. I think they converted 3 straight third downs after not having converted any for the entire game. Packers 1 of 4 on fourth downs. So that's not great. The Packers ran 70 total plays. We had the ball a long time, and we were able to string together things when the Packers decided they didn't need to go far. When they could say, like, look, they were sitting back in zone. And I know Richard Sherman said that they were not sitting back in zone. but it really looks like they were. And he's known to lie to us repeatedly throughout the course of his entire career, like trying to tell us that people refuse to shake his hand when they very clearly shook his hand and it was on TV and there's video of it. Things like that. Lies about stupid things that we can look up. So it really looked like they played a lot of zone. I mean, I go back and look at it, but it really looked like they did. There was stuff to get underneath. There were quick passes. There were little dump-offs or things like that. And the 49ers they've built a very good defensive line. And it does two things. They have great edge rushers, but a lot of people have good edge rushers. The biggest thing the 49ers have is that they also have guys who push the pocket forward. They were not able to stalemate. Our Packers, pass defense was not able to stalemate those defensive tackles. So when the defensive ends pushed hard upfield, the biggest thing you want to be able to do is have the quarterback step up in the pocket. And if he pushes too hard upfield, there's an escape route left or right because you got the D tackles kind of neutralized at least towards the front of the field. When the defensive tackles can push forward like they did with the 49ers front, there's just nothing you can do to stop that. It just kills you and makes sure that the pocket doesn't allow for enough maneuverability for somebody like Rodgers to be able to do the things he's used to doing and that he wants to be able to do. The only way you combat that is you throw the ball quickly. The ball has to come out quickly, and Rodgers has not wanted to do that through most of his career. He wants to make a perfect pass. He wants to avoid the turnovers, and he likes having the sure pass. Like, he's more convinced that the pass is going to be there no matter what, and he wants it to be very open a lot of times. If he holds on to the ball, he just can't win. That ball had to come out faster. We had to run shorter things, and it just didn't seem like we did that. One of the worst criticisms I've seen of this Packers offense was that it said the Packers looked like they were running their plays. Not that they were adjusting their plays or changing their scheme to affect what the 49ers were giving them. The Packers are running their plays because those are the plays they wanted to run, and they said afterwards that they couldn't get to the plays they really wanted to run because, the down and distance didn't work out for them. And I believe it was Peter Bukowski, possibly, who said this. It might have been Ben Fennel, but I believe it's Peter Bukowski, and I'm sorry if I'm getting all that wrong. They said, if you've got plays you like, run the plays you like. Regardless of what you got left, the plays we were running weren't working. So if there's an idea that this is a play that the Packers liked, that they wanted to run, but they said, not here. We can't do it now. Well, nothing we were doing was working anyhow. Packers averaged 2.8 yards per play and gave up 7.5 yards per play. The total yards, 339 yards to 198. 198. Now, that's especially hurtful to me because I was playing against my cousin Brendan Wilson, who was starting the 49ers defense, and he would have lost more points if we could have gotten to 200 yards of total offense. But 198, so he saved him a little bit of points. I still beat him anyhow, because I know you all care about that. Rushing yards were pretty close. We had six more attempts, then 4.2 a carry. So the rushing game actually was working all right, but you didn't have the patience to keep with that because you just couldn't. And some of that was, maybe some of that was a little later, but Aaron Jones had some really good runs in some cases where there were three guys about to meet him in the backfield, and he played pretty well. Richard Sherman, again, notorious liar, said that their main plan was to stop Aaron Jones. That seems like a really legitimate way of beating the Packers, because MVS looks like the sort of guy who can be a good three, but not a two. Not yet at least. And that remains to be seen. He may never get there. We don't have a two. We don't have a guy who can go out there and legitimately make his own route work. It's never going to be Kumerow. It will never be Kumerow. It clearly is not Allison at this point. He has been just not good this year. He's not been good. He's dropped first downs this last week. Had several bad plays. He had a ridiculous block in the back called where he clearly hit a guy in the side and across the chest. But yeah, he has not been anything. He has never turned into anything. MVS might be something, but he isn't. Equanimeous St. Brown, maybe, but he hasn't been out there all year. So that's been hurtful. So those are your hopes, I guess. But that's hoping. And, you know, you wish in one hand, and, well, you know how the rest of that goes. The biggest things, I think, going forward are the Packers need to, and everybody's on Twitter now, I think is fairly unanimous on this. All the other writers I follow or know or work with have all said, like, wide receiver is the biggest single missing hole on this team, or existing hole, missing part, now that I've cleaned up my metaphors and everything. The Packers need somebody else in another spot. If CeeDee Lamb somehow fell to the Packers, or if they could trade up to a spot where they got CeeDee Lamb out of Oklahoma, that would make me just giddy. And you can imagine what it would take to make me giddy, as you can see from how generally calm I am in my way of speaking. But I would love to see that. I don't think there's a chance in the world that happens, but if you haven't watched CeeDee Lamb play football, man, he gets open, he gets the ball, and he just makes people miss. He's incredible going up to get the ball. He's incredible in his route running. He's incredible once he has the ball. I'm just thoroughly impressed with him. I just don't think there's any chance he's anywhere where the Packers are going to be able to draft unless they trade up a considerable amount to get him. And I'd consider that to be a win because he's phenomenal. He is just a phenomenal player. He's incredible. He's just amazing to watch. But regardless of who they get, they need somebody else. And there's nobody they can get now. At this point in the season, don't pull that nonsense on me. Don't tell me that, well, the Packers need to go trade for so-and-so, or they should have made this trade. There's just nobody there that they were going to trade for who's going to be able to save this team. There's nobody out there, and here's what I really don't want to hear. I don't want to hear people saying we need to sign Antonio Brown. I don't want to hear it. And don't make any comparisons to other people. People are saying Dez Bryant and Antonio Brown, and we're going to win. Dez Bryant didn't play last year. Nobody thinks he's good enough to play. He was a Pro Bowler a couple years back. He's been phenomenal. He didn't play last year. The reason why is because he's not that good anymore. He hasn't been a dominant receiver. He was great, and he tailed off, and then just nobody was willing to put up with it because he's just not good enough. Antonio Brown might still be among the top 5 to 10 wide receivers in football if he were playing. Don't want him around. I just don't. And don't even compare that to anybody else out there. I don't want to hear anything about any other types of players. It's not even that he's a bad teammate. The guy is a potential criminal. And based on what people are saying and what these victims are coming out with, I don't want to have that around. And also, did you watch Hard Knocks? That guy is a joke. He's just ridiculous out there. He has cut down and belittled each of the last 3 teams he's played with in the last 2 years now. He has attacked their quarterbacks. He has attacked their head coaches. He has attacked everybody on the way out. He did it while he was still essentially wearing the colors in the last couple spots. He's not a guy you want. They have spent a lot of time over the last year trying to find people who not only were great football players, but were able to be somebody who could step in and do things. The biggest thing, and we've been getting great play out of them, but both Smiths, Preston and Za'Darius Smith, both of them great players, but the more important part is that the two of them have been great together, and the two of them have been great leaders in that locker room. Both of them have stepped up and found ways to be vocal about things and teaching people how to do things the right way. You can't throw Antonio Brown into that. You just can't. It's a terrible idea. They need to just stop that talk. And I know Twitter loves the talk because they're just convinced the Packers can just go out and get somebody and it'll all get fixed. But that's not how this works, and it's not how it's going to happen. The other thing I'll say, nobody played well in this one particularly. But the one thing I'll say is this is the second big, bad, terrible loss that they've had. Other stuff has been not so terrible, but this loss is especially bad because it matches up with I wanted to say San Diego, but it's the LA Chargers. The LA Chargers, 26-11 loss. It was a bad loss. It never felt that close either. The Eagles one is kind of a blip, and that was a close game where the Packers had the ball inside the 5, I believe, twice and had 8 throws at the end zone and didn't get it. That was just execution. Getting beat up the way as they did against LA and San Francisco in what are West Coast trips gives me the idea that maybe this is something where LaFleur has to learn. He's a first-year coach. You expected first-year coaches to be somebody who loses a bunch early and maybe starts figuring things out late. One of the biggest things that seems like he's not figured out very well yet is long road trips. And we haven't been crushed by it because the Packers have not played long road trips. I mean, we played the Eagles at home. We played the Broncos at home. We played the Bears on the road. We went down to Dallas, but that's the same time zone. Beat the Lions at home, Oakland at home, Chiefs on the road, same time zone. Chargers and 49ers in 2 of the last 4 weeks now in road games on the West Coast where we are 2 time zones away. Big long trip. You have to have a plan. You seriously do have to have a plan. Football isn't just showing up and coaching. When you're the head coach, you are running that team, and you are in control of a lot of things. You got to get out on the road. You got to figure when you're getting in, when you get to the hotel, when you run your meetings, when you get everybody in bed, when you do a lot of things. It seems to me that he doesn't have a plan yet. It seems to me that there's part of what's going on here, too, is that, I mean, even when they lost to the Eagles at home, they looked like they had a plan. It looked like they executed. It looks like the Eagles just played a little bit better. In these two games, it looked like they were a completely different team. Against the Chargers and against the 49ers, the Packers' offense looked completely different. They looked shot. They looked ill-prepared. They looked like they didn't have the energy, the emotion for that game. They were not ready for the moment. And I think some of that is the fact that it is such a long trip, and it is a different time zone, and they need to have a plan for that. And it looks like they didn't. And I'm not saying that's everything, because in the end, I think the 49ers are the better team. I think the 49ers right now are the best team in football. They got a great defense. They got a great front four. They got a good backfield on defense. They've got a couple good running backs. They have a group of pretty decent receivers and the best tight end in football. And if my sister-in-law is listening to me, it's not Kelsey. Kittle's the best tight end in football. Big Ted and tight end, too. But he's the best tight end in football. Also, I don't want to hear everybody freaking out because the Packers are going to play 2 teams who are 2-9 in the next 2 weeks. They're going to play the Giants at MetLife Stadium, and then they're going to play Washington back here in Green Bay or Ashwaubenon. So those games the Packers should win, and they should win them fairly convincingly. They're a 6.5-point favorite already in New York against the Giants this week. These are games the Packers should win, and I think they will. And then that sets them up to being 10-3, and you know, finishing the season with your 3 division rivals, the Bears might be done by then. Who knows? And at 5-6, I guess they're not cooked just yet. They could find a way to get through this, but they have not looked particularly good. The Vikings are going to have a couple tough games coming up here, but the Packers playing in Minnesota in the second to last week might be the biggest game of the season to that point. Well, of the season then, because they're going to play the Lions the week after that in Detroit to finish the season. The Lions just look like they're done, don't they? I mean, just they went and they played Washington and got beat by a 1-9 team. And they just look like there's nothing Patricia, our buddy Matty Patty, is really doing to get that team ready. And they just don't look like they've got it. And if Stafford continues to not play, they may as well just sit him for the rest of the year because they're already 3-7-1. That season's done. I mean, they lose next week or any time before then, they're going to be a losing record. They got no chance of anything. You're just putting Stafford out there with a broken back to try to just see if he can be something fun. So I don't know. At that point, it might be done. The biggest one left is Minnesota and then a bunch of teams that have losing records. That's what's up next for Packer football. Getting a little more happy as we go here, the Badgers football, that is, had a good game against Purdue. They had senior day. I was able to attend this game. Bought tickets through govx.com, which we've talked about before. If you are a veteran of any sort, you got DD214 or some sort of orders or something, you can get yourself a sign in for govx.com, govx.com. Fantastic site. They do a lot of discounted stuff, including like Oakley's, Camelbacks, Leathermans, and camping gear, also like hotels and other things. And they're not paying me to say it. I just think it's a fantastic site. But got tickets through them, reduced price tickets to go see this with my two older children and my wife. Wonderful day in Wisconsin, down in Madison. And just a great day to be watching football. It was a fantastic, nice. It was cool, but it was dry. Great game. Had a little bit of a scare early. I won't kid you. Purdue came down. They got out in front at one point, actually. It was a 14-10 at one point there where they got ahead and because it was Badgers got up early. They took the first drive, got the ball to start off with because it was deferred, and the Badgers got the ball 7-0, 7-3, 14-3, and you're feeling pretty good at 14-3. But then Purdue puts together a four-play 75-yard drive that takes a minute 37 and makes it 14-10. Badgers fumbled, one of four fumbles, or no, probably three fumbles and then one interception. So one of four turnovers. It really just killed the team, especially in that first half there. So fumble, four plays, 63 yards later, there's a touchdown Purdue. It is 17-14 Purdue. Badgers came back, get a touchdown, make it 21-0, or 21-17. There's a punt, there's a fumble, there's a punt. Badgers get the ball for what is the most exciting play of the entire game. Leads up to this play. They get a couple plays, a couple passes, line themselves up for a 62-yard field goal. Fifth-year senior Zach Hintz, he makes a 62-yard field goal. Not generally the field goal kicker. He didn't kick any of the extra points. Redshirt senior, fifth-year senior, on senior day, gets a chance to kick a 62-yarder, and he made it by nothing. I mean, that ball barely cleared it. I was watching, I was on the side, on the camera side of the field, on the end zone line, basically. And I could see the ball go. I'm just watching it from the side, and I see it just barely cross over the line. And anyway, I couldn't see the goalpost depth there, so I didn't know if it had inched inside the goalpost. But once they signaled a field goal, I mean, you just lose your mind. It felt like they had just won the game there, the way that everybody responded, the way that the team celebrated going off the field. The band was going crazy. It was an incredible play. Longest field goal in the history of the University of Wisconsin. And that's saying something. Playing since like the 1890s, it's a pretty great feeling to be able to see a team do something you've never seen done at Camp Randall before. So that, though, also gave the Badgers a little bit of momentum, made it a 7-point game, a full touchdown lead. Purdue got the ball in the second half. They looked like they were doing all right, and they threw a very lofted ball on kind of a roll-up play that he should have just eaten that ball. Tried to make a big play, threw into double coverage. Badgers got a pick, and that really kind of changed the entire game from that point, because the Badgers then go 95 yards in nine plays, make it 31-17. Purdue then gets a negative 7-yard drive. Badgers fumbled again. A couple ones here. I think this is the one that was Jonathan Taylor in the second half where they gave it to him, but it was one of those many, many plays where they were running the Wildcat with both Garrett Groshek from Amherst and also with Cruikshank, both of them in there. I get putting Cruikshank in there because you love seeing that amount of speed. He's the fastest guy on the team. And you love seeing that amount of speed be able to get the ball. You got to find a way to get him involved in this game. And he's not doing it as a wide receiver because there's a lot of depth at that wide receiver spot. And you're not taking Cephas off the field to do it. You're not taking, Kendrick Pryor. You're not taking A.J. Taylor off the field. You're not doing those things to get him on the field. Or Danny Davis, even. But put him in a Wildcat. Just interesting sort of thing to do. And he actually ended up having a good day of rushing. I'm trying to remember how many total yards he had rushing there. But it worked pretty well. He had a rushing touchdown. Cruikshank had a rushing touchdown. And the problem was is this time it looked like they had the mesh. If you don't understand that. Where he's making a read, essentially. He's putting the ball into the arms of Jonathan Taylor, and he's going to hold it there as long as he can to try to read whether or not, you know, the defensive end is moving down to try to close off the run cut lanes, or if he's hanging back watching, you know, Crookshank's chance to go out the outside. Looked like he held on too long, and it made it for a bad handoff, essentially. And that one goes against Jonathan Taylor. I think he's only up to 4 fumbles on the year, though. So everybody talk about how bad his fumbling is. Jonathan Taylor's fumbles have really gone down this year. He's been far more effective that way, and he has not made those sorts of mistakes. So I think that bodes very, very well for him, by and large. Looking at the numbers here, 47 yards rushing for Crookshank, 55 for Groshek, 56 for Kendrick Pryor. Pryor becoming very, very good at that jet sweep. It's good to see him out there. I'd like to see Crookshank do the jet sweep some too. Pryor's got a good read. He gets the blocks well. He understands a little bit of patience getting around the end. Groshek, Crookshank, Stocky even, and Jonathan Taylor all had touchdowns in this game rushing. And Jack Cohn threw for 2. One of them to Cephas on just an incredible catch by Cephas. A little underthrown. He goes up, high points it, pulls it down. He has incredible hands. Nice speed. He's got good speed, but he has incredible hands. Kind of a Anquan Boldin type. In that, yeah, he's fast enough to make things happen, but the biggest thing about him is if that ball's around him, he's got such strong hands, he makes those plays happen. The only other touchdown pass was to little bitty Dunn, Jack Dunn, who is a former walk-on. He's a junior, and he has 5 receptions on the year right now, and that was his first touchdown. I believe it might be his first career touchdown. It looks like that's his first career touchdown. He's a guy who had a lot of problems handling the ball on punts early in the season, but it's nice to see him get that. It said it was also set up in that it's a formation in which they have never thrown the ball. It was the first time they've made that look and had him throw the ball. So the cornerback steps in because of the formation, seeing Jack Dunn step off the line. He crashed in like it was run. He bit on the play action. Dunn was open by forever. Like, you could see him break off the line. Nobody covered him. That ball could have been released a second earlier. It would have felt a little better because he was getting close to the end of the end zone. But, yeah. And in fact, Jack Cohn's one interception, he was rolling out. Quintus Cephas was open, like wide open. We all saw it. I stood up and I just said, oh, he's gone. Because if you could have gotten that ball deep, then that would have been a touchdown. And the rule of thumb generally is, you know, you got a deep ball, throw the ball, you know, deep ball deep. Don't let the deep ball end up short. And that's exactly what Jack Cohn did on that play, though. He let that deep ball end short. And that's how that one pick happened. It was a big play that could have been a touchdown, should have been a touchdown, because he was open by forever. He put the long ball short, and that's something you just can't do, and you can't get away with that. It was a little bit of a sloppy day. Some of the score is a little misleading. Purdue came off a bye week, and Purdue seems to have saved all their trick plays for this game. They had a wide receiver throw out, then roll deep and throw to the tight end. They ran the flea flicker. They had a couple big plays that happened, a big touchdown to the tight end that were trick plays. They were pulling everything out of their pocket to try to just stay in this game, and it still was a 45-24 game. That said, Minnesota doesn't need the trick plays. Minnesota's got, you know, that's who the Badgers have next, the last game of the year, and it's for the Big Ten West Championship. Minnesota has good wide receivers. They have a decent enough defense. Their defense isn't as good as Wisconsin's, and they haven't played anybody whose defense is as good as Wisconsin's can be. But Wisconsin's defense hasn't been themselves the last couple weeks either. Giving up 24 to Purdue, that's the way they've looked in some of these games recently. It's just not quite as great as we were seeing in the beginning of the year. That said, this is going to be a good game this week, I think. And I don't know which way it's going to go. I think I give the edge to Wisconsin in that I think they were complacent last year. I think they expected Minnesota to roll over for them. Minnesota had a losing record last year when they came into Camp Randall, and then they beat Wisconsin. If Wisconsin had beaten Minnesota, they would not have gone to a bowl game last year. And this is kind of that year where Minnesota's had everything go well for them. They got that big win against Penn State when basically everything fell right for them on that game, and they took full advantage of it. You can't take anything away from them from that game. They won that game. They played a great game. They played error-free football. Playing against Iowa, they didn't play error-free football. Iowa had a good plan, came after them. We should see what they did there. We're also going to be playing in Minnesota. And while you'll say, oh, they're going to be so fired up, the Minnesotans aren't fired up for things. They're just kind of, they're there. They're going to be there. They'll be as loud as they've ever been. But, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think the Badgers are going to be more angry this week and this year than they were in any of the other ones here. They're going to be more ready like they were against Iowa, like they were against, you know, Nebraska. They got a trophy on the line here, and they got a lot of seniors who remember last year. And hopefully that's enough, because if you look at up and down the roster, the Badgers are the more talented team. And I really think Chris is the better coach. And they need to win this game. This is a must win, because, you know, otherwise you're gonna be watching the Gophers playing for a Big Ten title, and I have no illusions about beating Ohio State. Let's be clear on that. I have no illusions that the Badgers are gonna go win a Big Ten title. But I'd rather be the team in that game and have Minnesota watch us than the other way around. I really would. And I don't understand people who are like, well, I'd rather lose and not get beat up by Ohio State. I'm like, no. No, I want to be a champion of something. You're going to be a champion of something, win the West. And the Badgers have a chance to go out and do that. And they got a lot of good seniors out there who have a chance to end their career with something big. And it seems like they're ready for it. Chris Orr took the microphone at the end of the game, if anybody saw that. Was on the Jumbotron talking to everybody, said, hey, we want to get back that axe. It's axe week, everybody. We got to watch the Badgers, and hopefully they can get back the axe for everybody here. So we only have a little bit more here in terms of our main event. The last, I guess, next big thing is we've got, we do have Badger basketball this week. Badger basketball did not necessarily have what we were hoping for coming off of some of what they started with. We had big games early on where we were very excited to be able to see them play, Marquette, and see them play some of these other teams and get a chance to be kind of the champions of Wisconsin that they need to be. They beat McNeese, they beat Marquette, they beat UW Green Bay. But then today they and that's today being Monday night, in the Legends Classic, they lost to the Richmond Spiders. Now, we'll say this, Richmond has had a very good tradition of basketball there. They've been a pretty good team, especially the last several years. But this is not a team Wisconsin should lose to. Even at Richmond, they're, I guess, kind of at Richmond, but they're playing at the Barclays Center. Richmond is considered the home team. And Richmond is 5-0. But Richmond beat the Badgers by 10 points in this game. Reavers continues to play very well. He had 17 points and led the team in scoring. Also 7 rebounds and 1 assist. Trice actually had 5 assists in this game, and he did not shoot well, though. He was 2 of 10 at field goals, 1 of 6 from 3. Team on a hole, shooting 25% from 3. And that's kind of because the bench picked him up, too. Aleem Ford, 0 for 3. Reavers, 1 for 4. Trice, 1 for 6. Kobe King, 1 for 4. Davison, 1 for 4. Yeah, you don't win games doing that. You just don't win games doing that. They got 12 points off the bench to finish 52. Only 2 players in the Badgers made double digits. And actually, only 2 of the starters got more than 5 points. That's Reavers and King. King ended up with 10. Wall got 7 points off the bench, outscoring 3 starters. That's not something you can do if you want to win. 3 players for the Spiders get over into double digits, though they only got 2 points from their bench. Getting points from your bench is important in this, but yeah, the starters just aren't getting it done. Demetri Trice continues to just be kind of a disappointment at this point. Davison hasn't been enough. He's a hustle guy, he's a work guy, but he's not enough to win a game for you. We don't have the backcourt to play. Aleem Ford and Reavers are nice enough. And Reavers is playing very well, but we're getting nothing from our guard play. just nothing, and it's rough to see. And the harder games are coming up. Wisconsin's not going to have to play a Big Ten ACC challenge coming up on December 4th. They're going to be playing NC State. So it's going to be waiting till after Thanksgiving, obviously, so we won't talk about much next week. Then Indiana, then Rutgers, then, you know, Dub Mill, which is now not Dub Mill anymore. I guess it's not University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. It's just Milwaukee, or the University of Milwaukee or something. Then they have to play Tennessee, and then they, I guess they get Ryder. But, you know, there's several teams. NC State, Indiana, and Tennessee all in December. And things are going to get very real here. This is a team that does not look like it can make the NCAA tournament at this point. It's going to be a rough set for them. Marquette did bounce back from the loss to Wisconsin. They did get a 66-62 win over Robert Morris. So in the month of November, they did beat Loyola, Maryland, and Purdue, and now Robert Morris. Their only loss was to Wisconsin. They're still, I'm looking at the other teams that are in the Big East right now. Marquette, obviously nobody's played anybody. Marquette's 3-1. Providence is 4-2. Georgetown is 4-2. But, you know, Butler, DePaul, Xavier, Creighton, and Seton Hall all look very good. They're all, you know, one or no loss teams at this point. Marquette at 3-1 just hasn't played as many games as some of those teams, oddly enough, too. We'll have to see what Marquette can do. There's not a lot of scoring in these games. They're getting to mostly to 60. Robert Morris holds them to 66. The next game they'll be playing the Orlando Invitational to get Davidson. So, you know, that's not going to be the biggest sort of challenge for them. It's a 2-3 team they're going to be playing, but then they're not going to have a lot here early that they really should have to have problems with. If they don't roll through this early bit, because they got Davidson followed by Jacksonville, K-State, which is a very good, you know, that's a good program. And then Grambling, North Dakota State, and Central Arkansas. And those are some teams that they should really find ways to win against. And they really need to find ways to keep that going. But if you want to talk about teams that are really keeping things going, that's the Milwaukee Bucks. Milwaukee Bucks had a couple of very nice wins here in the last couple of weeks, getting themselves into a very good position. They just beat the Jazz 122-118. That follows up their victory over the Pistons 104-90. They also beat the Trail Blazers. I believe that Dame did not play that game. It was 137-129. So now the Bucks sitting at 14-3. Again, best in the division. They're 3.5 clear of Indiana. I really do rely on Flottam to carry me through a lot of this. Aaron's the guy who watches more NBA than I do. Biggest things right now, Bucks are on top of the East. They have had a very good run here recently. Their point differential is a 9.3. It's the highest in the East. They're on an 8-game win streak. Their last 10, they are 9-1. They're a game and a half clear of Miami and Boston and Toronto. So, I mean, and I'll tell you, I'm a bit surprised Toronto is still hanging there in the top four after everything that happened to them. So, you know, I guess good on them. But this has been one of those stretches where the Bucks finally had several home games in a row. They get the Trailblazers, Bucks, and Jazz all at home. Now they're going to play the Hawks at home, a 4-13 Hawks at home. Then they're going to go play the Cavaliers in the row, and then they get the 6-12 Hornets at home. I mean, this could be an 8, then 9, 10, 11, right in a row to finish out November. 17-3 really is where they should be at this point once they finish out these next three games in November. Not trying to hex it or anything like that, but Giannis has played great. He's got to be one of the names up there with, like, Luka Doncic and a couple other people for MVP again. Put up a big game in the last couple. I mean, he's been putting up great numbers. He put up 50 in the game against the Jazz. So 122 points for the Bucks. 50 of them are Giannis. And so he's willing this team. He's having just... He's having another great season. He had 14 rebounds and 6 assists to go along with that. And he's doing this also, a lot of this winning too. The biggest thing is they still don't have Middleton back. So they're playing Lopez, Bledsoe, Matthews, and DiVincenzo. DiVincenzo getting 6 points, shooting 0-for-5 on 3 and 2-of-10 overall. Not the greatest thing you want in 33 minutes getting 6 points. But Connington coming out, giving 27 good minutes and 11 points. 9 points from Ilyasova. Good bench scoring there, too, to help out. So it's 29 points off the bench to go along with 50 points from Giannis. So it's nice that they have this stretch here. It's nice that they have this ability to have continuing their winning ways. But eventually it'll be nice to get Middleton back and really help this team to boost those point scoring, even though they are the biggest margin of victory team in the East right now. It's something where it'd be good to see them get him back and really start to pull away from teams as we get into December. I guess I can't remember how many more weeks he has left before he's going to be coming back, but they do have a nice stretch here. Even when they start December, they get the Knicks, the Pistons, before they have to go play, well, they have the Clippers at home at least. And then they'll get the Magic, the Pelicans, and the Grizzlies, and the Cavaliers again. So by midpoint of December, they will have one more game against a winning team. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, just one more game against a winning team between now and December 15th. So that's what you're looking at this point. Giannis is going to continue to hold this team down, hopefully, and just getting good minutes from that bench. They've got enough depth now that losing Middleton isn't going to kill them over a stretch where they're playing mostly losing teams, especially. And the East hasn't been, great, but the East has a couple good teams. Boston and Miami look like they're going to be around for a bit. I don't know about Toronto. Philadelphia doesn't look like the same team they were last year. Indianapolis doesn't look like that. And nobody beyond Indianapolis looks like there's going to be anything there. Somehow, the Washington Wizards are in ninth place at 5-9. And that's what's going on in the East. So next week we'll have Aaron back, hopefully, and we can talk a little bit more Bucks and try to get you a little bit more, depth in terms of, breaking it down other than just the talking about the bench and other things there. But that's kind of where we are, and it's nothing really about the Brewers to talk about. So we're going to close up the main event right now, and we're going to do the one last thing here. We're going to take it back to our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
So there are a couple things that we want to talk about here, or that I want to talk about, since nobody else is here to stop me. First one, the biggest one, I think, is the Badgers volleyball team. The Badgers volleyball team is the number five ranked team in the country, fifth ranked overall. They are 21-5 overall. They are 17-1 in the Big Ten, which is kind of the best conference in volleyball. So they're number five. Penn State is number seven. Nebraska is number six. Minnesota is number eight. Now, the next game that they have is going to be Penn State. So it'll be 5-7. Penn State, they are a traditional power. They have been good at volleyball for a long time. And they are 16-2 in conference. There are only two conference matches left. If Wisconsin can beat Penn State, they will be the regular season Big Ten champion. All right, so that's phenomenal. The last match that they have will be Rutgers, the 2-16 in conference Rutgers, and that will be the last game, or at least match, of the season for them before they start heading off into playoff play. So it's been a phenomenal year. This is a phenomenal team that basically has kind of built this program with new coaching and new recruiting, and just really put together a good plan and a good program kind of over the last 5 years. And they have been very good at just finding ways to get people out there, getting really good talent, getting a lot of players to come in. They're really talking up their recruiting now even. It's been phenomenal, and it's been great coaching and just an ability to find and utilize very good players. And that team deserves a lot of credit. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch them once they start getting into nationals, because this team has a serious chance for a national title. They're as good as anybody out there. One of the next teams here is Wisconsin soccer. Women's soccer beat Duke 1-0. That actually put Wisconsin into the Sweet 16 for the second year in a row. That's where it ended. They lost in the Sweet 16, but they finished in the Sweet 16 for the second year in a row. And that's something admirable, and good job to the women on the Wisconsin soccer team. Other than that, moving on down to D3 football, we talked a little bit more about it last week as the playoffs just started. But UW-Whitewater gets a 35-10 win over Monmouth of Illinois. Obviously, there's several Monmouths, but Monmouth of Illinois. They will now play Wartburg. They are the Wartburg Knights. UW-Oshkosh, UW-0, ended up actually with an overtime loss to Central University of Iowa. They are the Dutch. So they lost to the Dutch 38-37 in overtime. Rough loss for the Titans there, but it was a fantastic season. Making it into the playoffs, it would have been nice to see them go a little further, but losing in overtime by a single point to a good Central team. So congratulations to the Titans, and the Warhawks move on again, like I said, and they'll get a chance to continue playing again as they're used to doing at this point of the year. Now the UW men's hockey team went to Minnesota to play the Golden Gophers in hockey. Now, the first game they lost 1-4, but they came back the next night and put up a very good game. They had a 3-3 tie, so it goes down as a tie. But for the sake of division play, or conference play, pardon me, the Big Ten Hockey Conference, which is not even 10 teams because not every team has a team in that league, but they did get the shootout win, so they get an extra point in the conference standings. Now, the men's hockey team is ranked 19th in the nation right now. They got a lot of young players. They got a lot of good talent. They've been a little less goal scoring from Cole Caulfield in recent games, but they still have enough other players on this team playing very well and getting this team ready. Keandre Miller continues to have a great year playing in that scoring defensive player. He's going to be something special. I believe he's already drafted by the Rangers. So that should be something interesting to watch as they go forward. But the Badgers getting kind of a split there in Minnesota. Next, they will get Michigan, the Wolverines, at the Kohl Center coming up this next weekend. UW women continue to be ranked number 2. They are getting some first place votes, but they're ranked number 2. They went and played St. Cloud State this week and beat them 5-3 and 6-2. The next weekend coming up is what's called the Country Classic Weekend. They will play Harvard, and then they will play the 8th-ranked Boston College Eagles. The last things here kind of going over are UW schools kind of playing each other now in the WEAC for hockey, men's hockey. UW Superior, and this is where we kind of miss Aaron here, former Yellow Jacket himself, not athletic, he wasn't like on the hockey team, but he covered the hockey team there. And the Yellow Jackets beat the Stevens Point Pointers 4-2. So Aaron's going to be celebrating somewhere once he realizes that happened. Maybe by listening to the podcast on the way home from the deer camp. Also, UW-Eau Claire then beat UW-Superior 3-2. So there are ups and downs, I guess. River Falls and Point split later. They had a 5-5 tie. After all of that, UW-Eau Claire now is the highest-ranked team in the state. They're the number 3 ranked team in the country. UWSP falls to number 6. So it's been a rough start for the season for the Pointers, but a very good season for the Blue Gold starting off already. They had a very good team last year. They just couldn't get in because the WIAC does not have an automatic bid into the NCAA tournament, even though they've had several national championships come out of this conference. And part of that might be because all these schools in the WIAC used to play in the NCHA, the Northern Collegiate Hockey Association, though they don't anymore. They now, the state schools, play in their own 5-team conference. It might also be that a 5-team conference maybe isn't a good enough standing and showing that you belong in the league, or in the playoffs. But still, probably only one of these teams is getting out of here because it's going to have to be in as an at-large bid. Just even the conference champion is probably going to get in only as an at-large bid. Which is why Eau Claire didn't make it last year, despite being ranked around the top 6 most of the season. Nothing else big to go over. The biggest thing I have is this Miles Garrett thing from Thursday night. This is nothing that should be compared to anything else that happened in football. There's not really a lot of plays like this. He took off another man's helmet, and I don't care what else anybody said. He took off a helmet and swung it in a manner that is consistent with attempting to kill him. He definitely needed to be suspended for the rest of the year. The conduct is ridiculous. And one of the things I've heard is, like, well, it's a violent sport. You know, where do you even draw the line? It's a violent sport. That's a clear line. It's not a football play. That was something after the game. It was something after the fact. It had nothing to do with football. There's no point. If you say hitting somebody, you know, like you push them, you're like, okay, that's like blocking. You say you tackle somebody, whatever. Those things are, they're violent, but they're within the game, and the guys playing expect it. They understand what's coming. You know, you're playing rugby and somebody tackles you, you expected it. You knew that when you walked out there. Nobody signed up to have their helmet taken off and then swing that helmet at an unhelmeted head. That sort of thing is ridiculous. It's beyond any sort of expectation of what anybody could expect going onto a football field. The next thing that comes up, though, is that Myles Garrett said a couple days later at the appeal hearing that he says he heard Mason Rudolph say a racial slur. And, of course, absolutely against that. I think everybody generally would be opposed to the idea of that. It doesn't mean you get to hit him over the head. It doesn't mean that. But we have to remember that he was surrounded by people. Like he came up and hit him. They were fighting on the ground. The referees were already there. Everybody else was there. It's an automatic personal foul to say the word that they're saying he said. Nobody heard it. And there were a lot of people around. If that had happened, you have to think that he's like, well, that guy called me whatever when he got to the sideline, when the coach asked him what's going on. His coach, his quarterback, all the players who went in front of microphones after the game, all of them said, this is unacceptable. We can't have this kind of thing on our team. All of them did. So that means you have to believe that every one of them knew that had happened or had heard that from Miles or from the other teammates who were all standing around him as this happened and said, well, still, you can't do that. I think it's something that's odd that there was no mention of it in the press anywhere. Myles Garrett told nobody until like 3 or 4 days later when he was having an appeal. I think that that's massively suspicious, and everybody should. If somebody said that, yeah, that's terrible. Mason Rudolph should be fined or suspended for saying something like that. I mean, maybe it's a game for saying something like that. You definitely need to be suspended or fined if you're saying stuff like that. But nobody who was there seemed to have heard anything, and it seems odd that he forgot about mentioning that until the very end. Because they definitely interviewed him. Several times he was in front of cameras and never told anybody about that. That would probably have been the first thing you would have said, I think. I mean, I would imagine so. Maybe you don't want to bring it up. I don't know. I mean, I can't put myself in that position. I just can't. It's not possible for me to imagine it. Not accurately enough. So, I don't know. The whole thing seems odd enough. And the point is, at the end of the day, maybe one guy said something, but the other guy did something. And he did something that very... I mean, Mason Rudolph earlier this year was hit and knocked out to the point that he was just out. Just out and could not walk and couldn't... Like, he was knocked unconscious at one point. And you're swinging at his unhelmeted head. That sort of thing is so far beyond the edge of anything that, yeah. Today is the day where the NFL denied his appeal, and, well, they should have. So I don't have any problems with that, and I think that's definitely well within the lines of what the NFL should be doing. But that being said, we have reached the end of our show for today. Hopefully I'll have Aaron back with me next week as we get ready for another wonderful week, and hopefully we'll have better news on the Packers front. We better, because if we lose to the Giants, there's definitely going to be a lot more angry talking, a lot more loud talking next week, and we might need to divide the podcast back up into two segments again. But anyhow, as I said, you can follow the show at Scotty and Johnny Pod on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Not So Humble Host, and you can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. You can also send us anything you have. If you have any questions for us or anything you want us to go over, and you can check us out at the website we have, scottyjohnny.com. You can also go to our Facebook page, because we put everything up there as well. But remember that whether you are on the town or you are on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening.